All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week three edition of the show, and we are indeed talking about a 2-0 football team after the Buccaneers go up to Detroit and pull off what you would at least call a minor upset in getting a win against a team that was in the NFC Championship game last year and looked really good in week one in their win over the Rams. Honestly, outplayed the Bucs. If you look at just the numbers, outgained them by almost double and got into the red zone a bunch of times, but a gutsy, and I do mean a gutsy, I called it on Twitter, if you follow me, at Bobby Game Day, a cast iron nuts type of win, and that's what it was. There were several instances and several points in that game where it could have gone the other way, and the Bucs seemed to be able to make a play every single time, especially on defense, and so, like they always say, the best part of being 2-0 is you have a chance to go 3-0, and the Bucs have that this weekend on Sunday at 1 in what should be a toasty Raymond James Stadium as the Broncos are in town. And the Bucs certainly looking ahead. I mean, the schedule toughens up, and this is a sneaky big game. And they're all big games. I mean, it's not like any one game counts more than the others. Certainly the division games with tiebreakers and things like that always do. But if you look at the Bucs schedule, let me bring it up here. Of course, I have the Bucs fridge schedule that if you still want one of, you can email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. But looking at the schedule ahead after this week, because they got the Broncos here, it's week three. Then they've got seven more games till the bye. And that's looking way, way down the road, I understand. But you've got after this week against an 0-2 Broncos team at home, you've got the Eagles at home, at Atlanta, at New Orleans, Baltimore at home, Atlanta at home, at Kansas City on a Monday night, and then San Francisco before the bye week. That's seven games where the Bucs could conceivably be an underdog in possibly five or even six of them. And I say that even if the Bucs like are doing well and doing what they're supposed to do, they could still be underdogs in those games just because it's a difficult schedule. Of course, division games are always kind of coin flips, especially if it's on the road. So, I mean, the Bucs could really be an underdog in five or six of the next 7 weeks after this weekend. And that doesn't mean you're going to win or lose because you're an underdog by a field goal or something like that. I'm just pointing out that you need to stockpile wins where you can get them. It was really huge to get the win in Detroit. I mean, that was really big for a lot of reasons. But now you have one that a lot of people may look at as a softball, which first of all, there are none of those in the NFL. But second of all, you've got one where, yeah, it does look a little bit easier compared to what's coming up. And you'd really hate to leave a W on the table when you did something so fantastic in Detroit the week before. And when you know, I mean, the Bucs could start 3-0 through three games and still reasonably be 5-5 or something like that through 10 games, which, you know, sounds bad. Oh, man, they're going to go 2-5. And I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm just saying you'd really, really like to be 3-0 before you start that stretch, and you have a chance to do it against a team that has struggled, and we'll talk about that on the show today. So thank you for joining us. Thanks to the Joes on JoeBucksFan.com for giving me the platform and getting me in front of you, which I always appreciate from them. Best place for Bucs coverage anywhere. And, you know, now that it's Thursday, it's later in the week as I record this, it's early afternoon on Thursday. We always look ahead, but I want to spend a little bit of time talking about that effort in Detroit because of how impressive it was. And the reason it was the most impressive, to be good in the NFL, you know, NFL teams are 55 guys, and that's a big number, obviously, but it's not a lot for a football game. When you look at college teams that have, you know, 70, 80, 90 kids dressed out, and, you know, NFL teams have their inactives. There's only whatever it is. What is it? 50 guys dressed on game day. I mean, everybody, I don't care how good your frontline guy. I mean, everybody wants the glamour guys. You know, you've got your starting quarterback. You've got the Mike Evans types. You've got the stars on defense, whether it's Antoine Winfield, who they were without, or whether it's Levante David, Vita Vea. You know, everybody's got their your top line frontline guys. But no league, I think, more than the NFL, you know, maybe hockey, relies on depth where, like, it's truly a 1 through 50 effort when you're trying to win a football game. That's any week, especially so when you're dealing with the injuries that the Buccaneers were dealing with. And so it's a testament to the Buccaneers to see what they have to deal with injuries and to be able to put in guys like Zion McCollum, who was in the concussion protocol but ended up playing and playing an extraordinary game, had a ton of tackles, made plays, passes defense. you know, the safety duo. Winfield was out. Of course, you always want Winfield. But they didn't miss a beat with Jordan Whitehead playing alongside Christian Issian, who had not just an interception, which that was actually the least of what he did because Jared Goff threw it right to him, but all the plays he made, all the plays both of those guys made with the ball in the air. And even when they gave something up, they kept the ball in front of them, collapsed on the play, never let anything get broken open. There was, I think they hit one deep one in the first drive, the Lions did. And that was it. Lions had 7 red zone trips, 1 touchdown, and got no points out of a few of them. And they needed every bit of that from the defense to win that game. Servasia Dennis coming in there. And K.J. Britt didn't play badly, but those guys splitting some time. And he stepped up and made some big plays, especially in the fourth quarter. And it goes on and on. I mean, Tyke Smith had a big game. All these guys. In the fourth quarter alone in that game. On Sunday, this is just the fourth quarter, Issian had 6 tackles. Tyke Smith had 5. Servasia Dennis had 3. Okay? All the names I just listed, McCollum, everybody, not a single one of them was drafted higher than the third round or later, and a few of them weren't drafted at all. They were undrafted guys. So it's a testament to Jason Light, first of all, for his ability to get guys in the draft at all points of it that contribute. And when you watch, we always get all nutso about the draft and the offseason, right? And we break down all these different things and these picks and we, you know. But when you're watching the draft come April, especially on day 2 or 3, and you get a little alert on your phone, you know, Bucks just drafted with their whatever round pick, Christian Issian, you know, safety Rutgers. You're like, whatever. You know, you don't, like, unless you're with the hardest of hardcore draft Knicks, that doesn't register with you. And then it won't for, no matter who it is, it won't for a few years because you don't know, you know. But then you look up a year, 2, 3 years later, and that's the guy filling in for one of your injured glamour guys, and he's out there making plays against one of the best teams in the NFC, directly contributing to a win. You know, Bucks draft Tyke Smith in whatever round from whatever the, well, he's from Georgia. He's not exactly a small school guy. But my point is, you might, you know, be out and about on a weekend during draft weekend. Not talking about the first round now. That's glamour stuff. I'm talking about that Saturday when it's the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th round and you get the alert on your phone like I do. Bucks just made a pick. Okay, whatever. I don't know much about that guy. But hey, if Jason Light's in charge of it, there's a good chance. And you, the draft is still a lot of randomness and a lot of luck. The luck is always part of it. Nobody's that smart. I don't care who you are. But there's a good chance if it's Jason Light making a pick in the late rounds, it was done for the right reasons, and that person has as good of a chance as any other, better than most other GMs that were picking, to be someone who contributes to your football team. And that's a big reason why they won, a huge reason why they won a game like they did. Because that's not a game the Bucks normally would win. And when I say the Bucks, I don't mean this edition. I just mean in general. Like that, when a team wins that type of game, you start to feel like maybe they've got something. Now, would I rather them be dominant and go out and just kick everybody's ass? Of course, and they were not. I mean, like I said, Detroit moved the ball. The Bucks got outplayed. If you just looked at the actual game statistics and even got further and went into the analytics, which some of you are into and others aren't as into, without knowing the final score, you know, the Lions won that game. But the Bucks found a way to win it. Now, I would have loved it if the Bucks had just done everything right, but they did enough things right and found a way to make enough plays. And those guys I just mentioned on the defense especially were a big part of it. When you can find young guys like that that can step up and perform in those situations, that's huge. Because it's going to take, I mean, we're only in week 3 and we're already talking about this stuff. And I hope the injury bug doesn't continue to bite the Bucks all year. And maybe it's just an early season thing, but you know how it is. I mean, it's the NFL. It's the most physical sport in the world. If we're dealing with this in week 3, isn't there, is there any reason not to believe it won't continue to be like that all year? You're going to need 1 through 50, not just your top 10 guys, not just your top 15 or 20 guys. So that was really, really encouraging to see. And the Bucks defense deserves a giant hats off for making plays when they needed to. And even when they got what looked like it was the final stop, they didn't quite get there, right? We couldn't run the ball, couldn't kill the clock. Lions had timeouts, had to give it back to them again, weather one more little storm, and I'll be damned if they didn't do it again. And they did. They found a way to stop. And Jared Goff has done well against the Bucks in the past, and it honestly didn't do too badly this weekend. But the biggest play of the game was the interception where the Bucks got big pressure. You know, give credit to the Bucks up front for getting pressure. That doesn't mean Goff should have thrown the ball. I don't know what the hell he was doing. I think that he thought his receivers would be in a different place because if you look at the all-22, there isn't even a Lion like anywhere. Like, nobody was where the ball was thrown. But Goff had guys coming right at him, just threw it over the middle. said, hell with it, I'm throwing it. And Izzy, and like it literally caught him. It was like right at his chest. And that was where you felt like, okay, hey, they can win this game. And they were able to hold on and do it. But it was really good to see. And offensively, you know, still want to see more. 20 points isn't a field day. And the running game is still not doing much. In fact, they are 32nd. That is last. There are 32 teams. 32nd in EPA per rush. So they get the least out of their running game. The least out of each play when they hand the ball off of anybody in the NFL right now. Rashad White is under 2 yards per carry. That's 35th out of 35 qualifying running backs with at least 20 or more carries. You know, not good. They haven't been able to run the ball. Now, they did some really good things in the passing game. They continue to convert on third downs, and that's always big. Obviously, you want to stay out of third down altogether as an offense and get first downs on first and second down. But, I mean, watching Baker Mayfield and Godwin work together and two of those like escape artist acts he had to pull to avoid sacks, then find a receiver for first downs, hits Godwin down the sideline for the open touchdown. I mean, Chris Godwin right now in two games, 15 catchable targets his way, 15 catches. Passer rating when targeted, a perfect 158.3, whatever perfect passer rating is. Literally a perfect passer rating for Baker Mayfield when targeting Chris Godwin. Now, I don't just mean on the catches. I mean on all targets because he's 15 for 15. 12 of those 15 catches are for first downs. What he's doing through two games is nothing short. I talked about how I expected more from him this year, thought he was still working his way back from the injury and that we didn't get the full Chris Godwin. Even though he was on the field last year, he wasn't himself. But this is even beyond what any of us, I think, could have imagined. It's only two games, and it'll regress to the mean. He'll have a couple of quiet games. But Mike Evans was kind of quiet this past weekend, right? And that's the beauty of the 1-2 punch they have, never mind Jaden McMillan. So the Buccaneers did what they had to do. Doesn't mean things can't be better. We need to see more from the running game, hopefully this weekend with Denver. That's a team that has struggled to stop the run, again, through two games at least. And hopefully that helps a little bit in part for getting the Bucs' run game going. Up front is where a lot of when I pointed out the Rashad White numbers there, I wasn't picking on him. I mean, a lot of that's not his fault. It doesn't feel like there's been much to be had in the running game. Bucky Irving brings another dimension, and he did okay. And yeah, you might see slowly a little bit of a shift in the ratio of how many carries that Irving gets versus how many carries Rashad White gets. And the Bucs' offensive line is still developing. Graham Barton is still developing. Had some good things he did, but still doesn't rate very highly. And neither does Bredesen in the run blocking. There are conflicting numbers, though, too. And they wrote about this, the Joes, on the website, Joe Bucs Fan. I read two different stats. Saw the same thing they did. Pro Football Focus, measuring clean pockets. How often does your quarterback throw out of clean pockets? PFF says Baker Mayfield has had the second most clean pockets to throw out of in the league, second only behind the Jets and Aaron Rodgers, which their offense hasn't done a ton either. And yet, clean pockets, supposedly, Bucs are number two there, and providing their quarterback with one. Another source called Doug Analytics, whatever you think of that, but Doug Analytics measured the time before feeling pressure for each quarterback. So how long do you have until you're at least pressured, not necessarily hit? And they've got the Bucs and Baker Mayfield at 2.23 seconds. That's the seventh quickest. So, you know, we always throw a lot of numbers at people, this and that, and you can look at them a variety of different ways. You know it's going bad when they all say things are bad. You know it's going well when they all say things are good. But more often than not, you can find some that tell you one thing and find some that tell you another. But hopefully this offensive line continues to improve. What I do know now, I didn't know this until Adam Schefter, the Bucs tweeted it and Adam Schefter retweeted it. What I know is the Bucs are 2-0, one, yes, we all know that. But number two, the NFC team with the most total wins since 2020, this includes regular season and playoffs, which NFC team has won the most football games of any of those 16 since 2020? Your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Winningest franchise in the NFC, regular season and playoffs, in the past five seasons, counting this partial season, so four seasons and two games. And that I would not have guessed that. I mean, I know looking back, okay, yeah, 2020 they did really well. 2021. They did even better, just didn't get as far in the postseason. And then the last couple years didn't have awesome regular seasons, but they've been a winning team the whole time. They haven't had a bad year. And now at 2-0 with a chance to go 3-0 for the first time since 2005. They've been 2-0 4 years in a row, but they lost the third game the last three times. We'll see if they can break through against Denver and get that next win. But it would be really big. Like, it would be really, really big knowing what's... I'm not saying they can't beat Philadelphia. I have no idea. I never am one of those people that lets go down the schedule and say that's a win, that's a loss. I don't do that. Just looking collectively is what I usually do. Let me look at these seven games and try and say, what does their record feel like? If they went 4-3 in their next seven, that would be really good. If they went 3-4, I could almost understand that. Even as tough of a schedule it is, you don't ever want to be 2-5 in any seven-game stretch. But they can go 3-0 today, or Sunday, and then have a chance to go 4-3 or even 3-4 over the next seven. They'll be in good shape. They'll have a winning record going into the bye week through 10 games, and then the schedule eases up a little bit after the bye week with the Giants, with Carolina twice. You've got a couple games against the Raiders and Chargers, which it's hard to say yet what those will be. But they're going to get a little bit of a breather compared to what's coming up. But if you lose this game on Sunday and you're 2-1, and let's say, you know, looking ahead, you know, five more games after that, and you go 2-3, you know, now you're 4-4, and you're heading to Kansas City for a Monday nighter before taking on San Francisco at home the next week. So yeah, you're flirting with 500. And when you go 2-0, you don't ever want to you don't want 500 to be on your radar ever again. You don't even want to come close to it the rest of the year. You want to stay at least 2-3 games ahead of 500 the rest of the season. Now that you're 2-0, it starts with going 3-0 against the Denver Broncos team that, again, has struggled. A rookie quarterback. It is Sean Payton, but it's a rookie quarterback, Bo Nix, and it's been tough for him so far. On passes, more than 5 air yards down the field. So anything that isn't basically a swing pass or a screen pass or just a little dink and dunk. On passes more than 5 air yards, he's 11 of 36, 212 yards, 4 picks so far this season. And that 30.6 completion percentage is the lowest by 6% of anybody in the NFL. It's also not just the lowest this year, it's the worst through weeks 1 and 2 of any quarterback, rookie or not, in the past 10 years. So hopefully the Bucs defense can have an even better day this Sunday against him than they did up in the Dome on this past Sunday. But I'll tell you, I'm really, really impressed with the young guys, really, really impressed with the efforts. As far as injuries go, you know, they may continue to need those guys back again. Vita Vea, looks like, you know, he got tweaked late in the game there, left the game, didn't return. Has a grade 2 MCL sprain, day-to-day right now, did not practice. He was out there on Wednesday. They had a shirts and shorts walkthrough. For Thursday's regular practice, he was not there, or he didn't practice. And so he's still day-to-day. It doesn't mean he won't play Sunday. His injury is not as serious as I was worried it might be. And with a guy like Vita Vea, the way he's built and as big and strong as he is, he's still carrying a lot of weight, and he's still, you know, I understand why he has tweaks. Just, you know, when a person of that mass, all the moving parts and all the weight and all the force produced, you know, stuff happens. So hopefully this is his one hiccup for the year injury-wise, but he's day-to-day. Luke Goedeke, not out of the concussion protocol yet, was there at practice but working on the side with trainers, not full go. Kalijah Kancey, still out, didn't practice, doesn't look like he's going to be around for Sunday. Winfield, not yet. The 2 weeks was always going to be optimistic. Looks like he's at least going to be delayed until the week after or maybe further. But everybody else seems like they should be okay. So the Bucs will be in okay shape injury-wise compared to this past Sunday. Hopefully you get Goedeke back. Although, listen, I mean, Aiden Hutchinson, the 4.5 sacks, which that's, I think they said that was the 7th time that's happened to the Bucs where they've allowed one guy to get at least 4 sacks in a game. Although it was the only time that they won the game. The other 6 or 7 times it happened, they lost, which you would think. But, you know, Justin Skule, hey, that's a big ask. And it's Liam Cohen's job, and he said it, you know, if it ain't working one-on-one, which that wouldn't work one-on-one for a lot of guys, not just a guy who's as green as your backup is. It was not a good day. Let's put it this way. It was not a good day to have your backup right tackle. That was just not a good day for that. But the Bucs absorbed it. And they did adjust. You know, you have to come in there and help, chip with a running back, or just change some things around. Whatever it is, don't just leave the guy isolated like that. But, you know, they were able to figure it out. And now they sit atop the NFC South. The only division, by the way, there's nine teams that are 2-0 out of the 32. And the NFC South is the only division that two of them reside in, because the Saints, what was that all about? Like, they go to Dallas and they just absolutely eviscerate the Cowboys, and it's like, whoa. And Derek Carr looks amazing right now. Again, it's only two games. Every week that goes by, you get more data points and you get more sample size and all that stuff. Pump the brakes, all right? Hey, man, that goes for the Bucs too. I'm not just saying that about the Saints. Atlanta got a big win. I was kind of – it's too early to even know who you need to be rooting for and who you don't. I mean, I don't want to get – that's all stuff for like November and December. But watching Monday Night Football this past week, right, where you guys were watching it, Eagles-Falcons up there in Philly – and game looked all but locked up for Philly. And my mind got to wandering, right? All of us did. Oh, hey, you know, Falcons are 0-10. Don't the Falcons have a really tough game this week? I can't remember who they play this week. I think they've got a tough one too. Yeah, okay, the Falcons play the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. So, Falcons 0-1. They're trailing in the fourth quarter. Again, they have no business winning against the Eagles. And they've got Kansas City coming in. My mind started to wander a little bit. Hey, maybe... they could be 0-3, and we could be 3-0. We can kind of just run away and hide, and you worry about the Saints. You know, Carolina's not going to do anything. If you can get Atlanta out of the picture, or at least keep them at arm's length for a while, then it's just a head-to-head deal with the Saints. That ain't half bad. I'd take that. Again, it's only week two, but I'm already thinking this. Of course, they come back. The Eagles can't run the clock out. I have a problem with that play call. Everybody says, how can you throw the ball? You throw it in a way that it's almost like a handoff, which that was. Barkley dropped it. I don't have a problem with it. I know people are all over Sirianni. But even still, there was what? A minute 50 left in that game. If they had run the ball instead and still settled for a field goal, they could have at least gotten the clock down to a minute instead of a minute 50 and left the Falcons less time. But what the hell was the defense the Eagles were playing? I mean, all game long, you watch these games, it's hard to score. Then they've got a minute and a half left, and they're on their own, you know, whatever yard line. And, like, in three plays, they're scoring a touchdown. You're like, wow. Like, that was worse to me than any of the game management. Obviously, in hindsight, you say, okay, we could have handed it off. So I was a little mad at the Eagles. But who knows? Come week 16, it could be the Eagles being the ones we need to have a loss. We don't know. Like, you don't know yet, you know? You don't know how the scenarios are going to play out. But that was just something I was thinking. And either way, it ended how it ended. I'll take where the Bucks are. One other thing I wanted to say, and I'll tell you what, speaking of guys we take for granted all the time, I try to make sure and bring it up whenever I can. Chase McLaughlin, another 55-yarder this time, or 54-yarder, and the Bucks won 20-16 in a game where he kicked two field goals, but they needed both of them because the Lions could have kicked a field goal, and the Lions, remember, missed out on an opportunity to kick a field goal of their own before the half because of their own mismanagement, and they were down four late in the game, and they had to score a touchdown instead of kicking a field goal. That can be scary sometimes, too, because, I mean, at least when you're up by three even, you feel like, okay, well, they want to get into field goal range and get their field goal. When you're up by four, you're like, oh, they're going balls to the wall for a touchdown. Sometimes I almost feel like I'd rather be up three than four. You get scared because they're going to sell out for the touchdown. And I think teams, when they know a field goal ties it, they kind of do back off a little bit. But the Bucs were up four, but the reason they were up four is because of Chase McLaughlin making another long one. It's not just him. I mean, to be fair, even though I love him and he's one of the best in the league, I think. We said this last week, remember? Talking about kickers and how the kicker used to be some 5'8" foreign guy, like an ex-soccer guy with like a pot belly and partially balding, and they just brought him in. That was like kickers in the 80s. And I mean, they had the barefoot kickers, all kinds of crazy stuff. And like making a 45-yarder was a big deal. It's like, oh, this is a 45-yarder. Let's see. This is a coin flip now. We don't know. You know kickers from 50-plus yards this year now. I think I didn't write this down, but I'm pretty sure I have the numbers right. From 50-plus yards in the NFL this year, are 33 of 35. I know they've only missed two. I think 33 of 35 is the right number, but it's in the 30s. This is all kickers in the NFL. 33 of 35 from 50 yards or more. That's extra point type of numbers from 50-plus yards. The kickers today are not some little out-of-shape guy that used to play soccer and smokes in between the quarter breaks and at halftime and comes out and tries to kick a touchdown, as the old joke goes. You know, these are primo athletes now. Even like the Bucks preseason game against the Dolphins, because I have some connections in the TV business because I've done some work there, I said, hey, let me be that guy that holds the parabolic mic. I talked about it on the show. And so I got to stay on the sideline and like hold that big plastic dome thing with the microphone for the whole game. It was pretty cool. But that's not even what I'm talking about. I'm talking about pregame. I was down there before I had to do anything. And I just went down there and stood right there like next to the kickers and watched them warm up kickoffs and watched them warm up field goals. And they're out there like by the midfield logo, like the Bucks flag painted on the ground. And they're just popping them in from like 55, 58. The ball just explodes. I was watching Jason Sanders for the Dolphins, and I was watching McLaughlin, and both of them, I mean, just boom. Like, these guys are nothing like what it was like when, or at least when I was growing up as a kid in the 90s, where it was like, uh-oh, 52 yards, man, I don't know about this. Like, now they're just 33 of 35, and guess what the two misses are? They're by the same person. Okay, I'll give you a second to guess, and I'll give you one hint. The two misses of in the whole league over 50 yards this year are by the same guy, and it's not someone who you'd think it would be. That's all I'll say. Now I'll wait a couple seconds. Do you have in your head your guess? Justin Tucker, the greatest kicker of all time, he's got two misses from 50. Literally no other kicker in the league has any. Like they're making them all. So it's amazing. And on top of that, what's happening now with the new kickoff rules is the field position is a little bit further up. Like now touchbacks come out to the 30, most of them. There's different rules, but the standard touchback on the new kickoff is at the 30-yard line. So you combine starting from the 30-yard line instead of the 25 or even the 20 like it used to be. Combine that with how far you have to get into field goal range, which is closer to you now, not to the end zone, but further back from the end zone. So you used to start your own 20, and you had to get like minimum to the 35-yard line to have a chance. So that's 45 yards you had to get just to be in outside field goal range. Now you're starting at the 30, and you only have to get to the other 40. So, you know, it's 30 yards. You have to get 30 yards instead of 45 yards now. And you're already in field goal range. Like, without even like you get two first downs on a drive, and if it's a drive off of a start at the 30-yard line like a lot of them are, you're in field goal range right now. I mean, these guys are in range when they get off the bus. And these high sailing kicks. And they're not just making them. Like, you watch a guy hit a 50, like McLaughlin, his 54-yarder, whatever it was, 55-yarder. They're not just making it. Like, the ball is, like, still going up when it goes through the up. Like, they'd be good from, like, 60, 63. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. I don't have a problem with it, by the way. Some people think it's a problem. The only thing I have a problem with is the kickoffs. I've talked about this already, but they need to move the kickers back on kickoffs. The new kickoff rule is fine. I don't mind it. But that ball shouldn't, you shouldn't be able to land the ball in the end zone unless you really give it a thump. The standard kickoff now, it's from the 35. Guys can hit the crossbar almost. Move them back 5-10 yards and keep everything else the same. Let's have more actual returns because they literally don't have a choice. They're catching the ball in the field of play. Then you might have something. And then the other big, I don't want to say controversy, but the other thing that people are complaining about through 2 weeks is that passing is getting more difficult. Defenses are getting more advanced. There's so many checkdowns. The deep ball is dying, taking a deep shot down the field. Mel Kiper, I don't know if anybody saw the clip. I should have recorded it and played it, but I'll just paraphrase. Mel Kiper wants to see a rule change where there's a certain distance. This is almost like banning the shift in baseball. He wants the two high safeties banned, like where the safeties are way back. You can still have your safeties, but like he wants them within, whatever, 15, 20 yards of the line of scrimmage, 10 yards. I don't know what the number is. But he doesn't want you to be allowed to line up your safeties way back deep in your two high look because he says it's killing the entertainment value of football. There's no more deep shots down the sideline. There's a lot of just dinking and dunking, short passes, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm not going to get into a whole thing with baseball. I am inherently opposed to any rule that limits where people can stand. I don't like that. Like like baseball, I'll just say this much. I don't think banning the shift has changed anything with baseball. I think the pitch clock has done a ton. Banning the shift has done nothing as far as increasing the viewer value, the increasing the watcher value of a game. And to me, you get a pitcher and a catcher. They have to be where they are. And then you get seven other guys. And if they all want to stand by the left field foul pole, let them. There are no set positions. Like, let them stand wherever they want. Same thing goes for football. I mean, don't start with this, oh, he's got to be in this zone to start out. No, go. You want to stand 80 yards back, go for it. You want to stand 15 yards back, go for it. You want to have no say. I don't care what you do. That's up to you. I've always been a basic believer in having as few rules as possible. It makes things simpler, and simple is what people like. Same with the kickoff. We got three different spots a touchback comes out to right now. It's hard to understand for people. Like, just if the ball's a touchback, pick a yard line, say this is where it goes. Too many rules, basically. Too complicated. So I don't like that part. But anyway, point is, Mel Kiper is just one guy. That's just kind of it's getting harder and harder to throw the ball. So people are saying, is the pendulum swinging now? Remember how running the ball used to be a big thing in the 90s and you played smash mouth football and you had your star running backs like Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith or Thurman Thomas or, guy that guy was important, where now running backs have become interchangeable. It's all about the passing game. And maybe the pendulum's swinging back the other way. People are saying, oh, hey, maybe running the ball's in vogue again. Maybe now you got to be able to run it. Guess what? Here's that stat, EPA again. It's one of the best stats. It stands for estimated probability added. And I won't get into the weeds too much with it, but for those of you that have never heard of EPA, basically any situation in a game has a win probability for both teams. So you take into account the score, the quarter, the time left, and the down and distance. So 2nd and 8 from your own 35 with 3:54 to go in the third quarter, and you're up 20-17. The offense has a certain probability of winning that game, and the defense has a certain probability of winning that game. And then every play that's run, that probability changes to whatever the new situation is, right? So that's win probability. And each play has an EPA. How much probability did you add with this play or subtract? Did you get closer to winning or further away from winning? And it's basically just, of all the different numbers that are out there, it's the one that like distills it down to the most basic. Did this help you or not? Was this good or not? So running plays, especially if you take out quarterback scrambles, which were part of a lot of, they filtered out the quarterback scrambles, and the running game EPA per play is no different than it ever has been lately. I mean, the past 20 years. And it's actually a little lower. Still well lower. Like the EPA per play on running plays versus passing plays, it's not even close. It has never been close in the modern NFL. Yeah, and maybe in 1987 it was. But if you want to increase your chances of winning the game, you have a much better you have much better odds of doing that every time you decide to throw the football. And every time you hand it off, on average, your EPA is negative. You have subtracted probability of yourself winning the game. That continues to be a fact. So the pendulum might be swinging a little bit, but don't let anybody tell you, oh, hey, it's gone too far toward passing. Running smash mouth is back where it is. No, you still need to be able to throw the ball mainly and move the ball down the field and aggressively accumulate points. And that's what I want to see from there's been so much to like about the Bucs offense, but they haven't been as much for the points, right? We need the point. Like moving the ball is good. Love what they're seeing with Chris Godwin. Week one against the Commanders, they were comfortable. They scored 37 in that one. And so they're average, 57 total points. So yeah, they're almost averaging 30 points a game. But a game like Sunday, that was on the defense, and they got it done. So hopefully they light it up this Sunday when they take on the Broncos. 1 p.m. There are tickets if you want to go to the game, and I know Sunday at 1 in September is nobody's idea of the most comfortable. But I spent my whole life going to Bucs games at anything besides 1 o'clock when I was a kid in the 80s and 90s was like it was a huge deal. Like even a 4 o'clock kickoff, it was like, ooh. We're big stuff, man. We got a 4 o'clock kickoff this week, like at home. Like that was only for when you played out west. It was always Sunday at 1, Sunday at 1, Sunday at 1. And we didn't complain. This is, I know, we used to walk uphill both directions to school, and maybe I sound like an old man. Sunday at 1 was all we knew, man. So don't freak out because it's going to be a little bit hot. And there's tickets. I mean, they've got the stupid fees, but I think tickets are going for under $40. If you add the fees on, that's still around $50. So if you want to go to the game, you can still do that this weekend. I totally get it. People like the experience of being at their house and all that stuff. I'm not sure if I'm going to go yet or not. I haven't decided. I'm just like you. I'm a fan, okay? I can get credentials sometimes if I really want to, but most of the time I buy a ticket just like everybody else because I'm a fan first, always have been. My son's going with some friends, and their dad, because he's got extras and he's got season tickets. I may get one myself. I'm not sure yet, but I'm just letting you know that if you guys want to look into it, there's both on the secondary market and through the Bucks website itself, it's not a bad weekend for tickets. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address. BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram. It's all the same anywhere you go. @BobbyGameDay. Email me. If you want a fridge schedule, it's not too late. I can email you the file. You can print it out in color. And other than that, we are done for week three. We get ready for the ball game on Sunday. Broncos at Bucks. One team is 0-2. The other's 2-0. Hey, do not pencil this one in. I've got a funny feeling it's going to be a lot tougher than everybody's expecting. It always is in these situations. So don't think for one second the Bucks are just going to show up and walk to a victory. It doesn't usually work that way in the NFL. And Denver's guys have paid contracts just like the Bucks do. But either way, enjoy the game. Whether you're going, whether you're watching on TV at home, with friends, family, whatever. Have fun. Have a great weekend. Be safe. I'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a 3-0 football team. And until then, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks. You won't belong to me, I let you down.